This is Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levenson. In 1973, Clayton Delery Edwards was living just outside New Orleans in Metairie, going to high school, and as he puts it, wrestling with the G question.
By that point, I'd figured out what it was, and now I still wasn't sure how it was done, but I knew what it was.
Right. So you're like my mom.
Yeah.
Just kidding. My mom knows what's up. Clayton's talking about being gay.
I was 15 years old, I had been gay bashed pretty relentlessly. They were picking up on the, I fit a lot of stereotypes.
He says he was small, had a high-pitched voice.
Check, check, check on the stereotype list. Uh-huh.
People's perceptions of Clayton quickly turned his own confusion to fear when he saw something on the evening news.
And the regular programming was preempted because there was this horrible fire in the quarter.
Police arson squads are investigating the ruins of a New Orleans bar where a fire last night killed 29 persons and injured 15 others. Bruce Hall reports.
Even the earliest television news reports described it as a known hangout for homosexuals.
The two eyewitnesses, who would not allow their faces to be shown, told WWL-TV newsman Bill Elder it was arson.
And you say it was murder.
I'm not going to say murder. I will say that what was done intentionally.
Those inside said there was.
And so I thought, they're going to kill me.
Most headed for the windows, but that proved to be.
On Sunday, June 24th, 1973, the second floor barroom of the upstairs lounge burst into flames. The bar, which is on Charter Street in the French Quarter where the Gemini Bar now stands, was having a benefit for the Metropolitan Community Church, or the MCC, the first church group to primarily serve LGBT people. The bar was packed with MCC members and others celebrating the fourth anniversary of the Stonewall riots in New York, which were extended protests against police raids in gay bars. Around 8 p.m., someone opened the door to the stairwell from inside the bar, and as it's described by many, there was a huge fireball that burst up the steps through the frame of the door and into the barroom. 32 people burned to death, and many, many more were severely injured.
And as a kid, I said, man, this was the worst mass murder of gays in U.S. history.
That's Royd Anderson. He was just a baby in New Orleans when the fire happened, and he never really heard anyone talk about it when he got older.
Why am I not hearing about this?
The only reason he did actually hear about the fire is because his dad was a historian and used to take his kids on walking tours.
Yeah, he stopped us on the corner. It was me and my two other brothers. And he said it was a gay bar and somebody lit it on fire and it's no one knows, they have an idea of who did it. But to this day, no one was arrested.
This baffles Royd since there was a main suspect, Roger Nunez, a patron that night at the bar.
He got in a fight at the bar. He got kicked out. I'm puzzled to this day why he wasn't arrested.
People claim to have heard him mutter, I'm going to burn this place to the ground on his way out. And then?
10 minutes later, the place is on fire. He failed his lie detector test. He would get drunk a lot and make confessions to friends. And he befriended a nun, Sister Mary Ladette. And she reportedly told the fire chief years later, like 25 years later, that this gentleman confessed this fire to me, Roger Nunez.
Roger Nunez committed suicide 1 year after the fire, and the case permanently closed. So Royd made it his mission for people to talk about it and keep talking about it.
That prompted a self-made documentary that came out in 2013.
This whole place was in full flames. People were at the windows cooking, is the only way to describe it.
That same year, historian Jim Downs was also thinking about the upstairs lounge fire and how to get it on the country's radar. So for the 40th anniversary of the fire, he wrote an article for Time magazine.
What grew out of that article became the first chapter of my book.
That's Jim talking to me from his home in Pennsylvania. His book's called Stand By Me, The Forgotten History of Gay Liberation.
The chapter is called The Largest Massacre of Gay People in U.S. History, and it's all about the upstairs lounge.
Unfortunately, as of June 12, 2016, that's no longer true about the upstairs lounge.
49 people were shot and killed at the Pulse in Orlando, a popular gay club.
I would have never imagined in all of my editorial revisions and conceptualizations of the book to think that there would be another massacre that would be larger than what happened in New Orleans. I really thought that that type of massacre, that type of tragedy, was something that was in the past.
You're listening to Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levenson. After the deadly attack led by Omar Mateen at the Pulse, Jim wrote another story, this time an op-ed for the New York Times called Before Orlando, There Was New Orleans.
This was an opportunity to really also show that bars, the places that many people often mythologize about gay life as these, you know, sites of celebration, as this party culture, are also the sites of our oppression and terror.
It took days to identify the Upstairs Lounge victims. Not only were they so badly burned, many had fake IDs to protect themselves from being outed as gay. They were in the closet. Multiple families refused to claim their relatives' bodies, and churches refused to host a memorial service.
Sometimes people laughed at them over the phone. Sometimes they just hung up without answering.
This is what two national MCC ministers, including founder Troy Perry, who flew in from California, experienced when making these calls to local congregations. St. Mark's Methodist Church on Rampart Street eventually opened its doors and held a service a week after the fire. Reverend Perry also visited victims in the hospital. Here's a clip from Troy Perry's conversation with StoryCorps years after the fire.
I remember going to the hospitals. One of them, school teacher, burned so badly. He said, well, the school board had just called me to tell me I'm fired from my job. We got in the phone call while he's laying in the burnt unit. He said, can you help me find a job? I said, absolutely. He was burned so bad, I couldn't imagine him living. I said, absolutely. He died the next day.
A lot of news outlets quickly buried the story, especially TV. But Clayton has respect for some of the local print reporters at the time who kept putting out stories about the fire.
And I give credit to journalists for the Picayune and the Statesitem for publishing sympathetic articles about all these dead LGBT people who, you know, the police chief, for instance, dismissed the victims of the fire as a bunch of thieves and queers.
Not only did members of the press call out the negative comments and jokes going around.
How many people died in the Upstairs Lounge fire, and the punchline was not enough.
Reporters also called out those not saying anything at all.
The political leaders, Moon Landrieu.
That's Royd again talking about then-Mayor Moon Landrieu.
And Edwin Edwards, who was the governor at that time, they made no statement of public sympathy for the victims. Nothing.
Royd and Moon Landrieu both went to Loyola University, but at different times.
I remember seeing him at an alumni function. I said, hey, look, I'm working on this documentary in the Upstairs Lounge fire. He was back, and I said, can I talk to you about it, maybe for an interview? He said, well, I was out of town at that time. I was in Europe, so I really can't help you with that.
But Mayor Moon Landrieu came back from an out-of-town trip that same year when a sniper killed seven people at a Howard Johnson's hotel on Loyola Avenue.
He came home. He cut his trip early, and he had a press conference in a remote location. He was in front of all the news cameras. He was in front of all the print journalists. He declared days of mourning for the city. He was perfectly happy to let the Upstairs Lounge slide.
Today, Moon Landrieu's son Mitch Landrieu is the mayor. He declared for the first time a day of mourning on the 40th anniversary of the fire. And a few nights after the Pulse massacre, Mitch Landrieu attended a local service for those victims. So times have changed. Within hours of the Pulse attack, the governor of Florida made public comments, along with other governors around the country, and POTUS himself. Obama extended condolences to the victims and their families. But one of the reasons I got Jim Downs on the phone was to ask him just how different he thought this all was. Let's look at Orlando now.
It was in the news cycle for a larger period of time. It made national news. So I think that's a sort of major difference.
More coverage is a good thing, but Jim says that doesn't necessarily mean it's good coverage. He found the emphasis on shooter Omar Mateen's sexuality and relation to Islam a distraction from what he considers the more important pieces.
Meanwhile, there are families who were literally picking up the phone learning that their children were in the morgue. I mean, that's the story. The story of homophobia that children still don't tell their parents that they're queer. So it's like, there are so many different stories to tell.
Before Orlando, Clayton thought the younger generation could finally shed these anxieties.
I didn't think that LGBT people in their teens and 20s now experience the kind of existential fear that they could be wiped out simply because of who they were. And that's a fear that I grew up with and that my husband grew up with.
He feels sad that today's queer youth still experience that same fear. which is why Royd Anderson, who's also a middle school history teacher, feels the need to talk about it with his students. He always teaches the upstairs lounge fire in his class, even though it's not part of the required curriculum. He hopes one day it is. Tripod is a production of WWNO New Orleans Public Radio in collaboration with the Historic New Orleans Collection and the University of New Orleans Midlow Center for New Orleans Studies. Special thanks to Evan Christopher for the opening theme music and to Pizza Delicious on Piety Street for their additional garlicky support. Catch Tripod on the air Thursdays during Morning Edition and again on Mondays during All Things Considered. You can hear Tripod whenever you want, wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also go on iTunes and write us a review. It gives us special powers. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Ever heard of it? Handle is Tripod NOLA. And there's so much more going on those platforms that you don't see or hear in the episodes. Check it out. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson, and I'll tripod you later.